The Mark Steiner Show is brought to you by MeQ, Baltimore's credit union. Offering a full range of financial services, MeQ, Baltimore's credit union, is helping its members and its community prosper. When you invest in yourself, MeQ invests in you. For more information, www.mecu.com. Hello, I'm Mark Steiner, and welcome once again to another one of our Yes Magazine conversations, of course, with the 15 extraordinary people, as they put it, Yes Breakthrough 15, people who are transforming the way we live. We're about to have a conversation with Eboo Patel, a Muslim American who founded the Interfaith Youth Corps, and the book that really has grabbed many people that he has written, Acts of Faith, The Story of an American Muslim, The Struggle for the Soul of a Generation. Joins us now, and Eboo, welcome. Good to have you with us.
Thank you so much, Mark. Thanks for having me.
So, Eboo, this is a this idea of interfaith dialogue, interfaith understanding, interfaith action, for you seemed to be bred out of in some levels, as a desire, on one hand, a desire to address the extremism in religion that you see hitting many young people, and on the other, is the power of people like your grandmother doing things you didn't even know she was doing.
So I think that's exactly right, Mark. I'll tell you the quick story about my grandmother.
Please do, yes. Great story.
Which is, when I was visiting India, I was 21 or 22 years old. This was a year or so after college. And I woke up one day in my grandmother's apartment in the south of Bombay, and there was a woman there who I'd never met before, and she didn't look like she was part of the extended family or the household help. And I asked my grandmother, you know, who is this woman? My grandmother said, well, I don't know her real name. We will call her Anissa. The reason that she is here is because her father and uncle are abusing her, and the leader of the local Muslim prayer house needed a place where she would be safe, and so we'll keep her safe here. And I kind of lectured my grandmother. I said, you know, you can't just be taking in women off the streets who are being abused. I mean, what if their father and her father and her uncle are roaming the streets of Bombay looking for her? That's putting you and all of us in danger. And my grandmother kind of gave me this arched eyebrows look and said, how old are you? And I said, 21. And she said, I've been doing this for more than twice the amount of time you've been alive. And she padded over to the cupboard, and she took out this shoebox with all these old Polaroid pictures of all these women from all these different religious backgrounds from all over India who she had taken into her home for one reason or another over the course of a half century of service. And she'd written on the back of these Polaroids in little pencil chicken scratch, the age of the woman when she came, the woman's name, what the woman was doing now. And she's like, this woman got remarried and owns a cake shop in Hyderabad. This woman went back to her family in Calcutta and is doing well. And after, you know, 6, 8, 10 of these stories, I looked at my grandmother and said, you know, why do you do this? My grandmother said, well, I'm a Muslim. This is what Muslims do.
Mm.
And that was such a moment of, I guess, shock for me to hear her say so simply, the reason that I take abused women into my home, the reason I've been doing this for a half century, is because this is what Muslims do. And I thought to myself, you know, I call myself a Muslim, and what am I doing that even comes close to this level of being a mercy upon all the world, which is what the Quran says. And I thought to myself, there are many people whose faith has inspired them to do remarkable things. You know, dozens of names that we've all heard of, from Dietrich Bonhoeffer to Martin Luther King Jr. to Gandhi to Dorothy Day, and tens of thousands or hundreds of thousands like my grandmother that most people have not heard of. And I wondered, you know, in an age in which religion is quite often seen as a barrier of division or as a bomb of destruction, what if we were focused on religion as a source of service and as a bridge of cooperation? And what if we could channel that hugely powerful force in many people's lives into something that could benefit the world? And that's really the genesis of the Interfaith Youth Corps.
And you also had your own struggles as a young man with younger man with realizing you could have gone either way. I mean, because the power of the passion of one's faith and the extremism that can be born out of that can be very tantalizing and addictive to young people.
I think that that's right. I think that a lot of young people are on an identity journey. They're asking themselves the question, you know, who am I? How do I relate to you? What can we do together? And as I say in the book, Acts of Faith, who meets you at the crossroads of that identity journey is all important. And I was very fortunate to have some really powerful and positive mentors who channeled my energy, and sometimes that energy was accompanied by anger and frustration, and channeled it into a very constructive direction and encouraged me to ask the question, how do I relate to people who are different from me in a way that's cooperative, in a way that's constructive? How do I understand the different parts of myself, India, Islam, America, in a way that's mutually enriching instead of mutually exclusive? How can I be a better mercy upon the world? And so I'm very grateful for those mentors, and I try to be that for other young people, and mostly to ask the question, you know, what does it mean for this generation to be architects of bridges of interfaith cooperation?
And what does it take? And how you define it? Because it's more, what I understand from reading what the organization that you founded, Interfaith Youth Corps, is more than just a dialogue group. It's an activist group.
Yeah, I would. You know, we're a social action nonprofit organization, a movement building nonprofit organization.
Right.
The vast majority of our work is on American college campuses, and what we do is we train young people to be what we call interfaith leaders or interfaith bridge builders, and we train them to run something on their college campuses called the Better Together campaign. And you know, over 100 campuses have already run this campaign, and we've trained several hundred people in the methodology. And over the course of the last 10 years, we've probably trained some thousands in the principles of interfaith leadership. But we've become much more focused on how we think young interfaith leaders can be most effective. And that's in this campaign called Better Together. Basically, we want to train young people to be able to bring people from different religious backgrounds together to build meaningful, positive relationships between Muslims and Jews, Buddhists and Baha'is, humanists and Hindus, Protestants and Catholics. All those people ought to have meaningful relationships with each other, positive relationships, so that if some demagogue comes along and says, you know, Mormons are all crazy, you say to yourself, actually, I know that's not true, because I have a Mormon friend. If all Muslims are taking extremist time bombs, nice. I know that's not true, because I have a Muslim friend. And interfaith organizers create the spaces where people from different backgrounds become friends. Interfaith organizers also create the space where people from different religious backgrounds develop what we call an appreciative knowledge of each other's religions. You know, I wish that the world, if the world knew one thing about Islam, I wish that they knew that mercy was the most powerful, tangible, present value in my religion. It's in our most common prayer, Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim, in the name of God, the all-merciful, the ever-merciful. The Prophet Muhammad is called the Prophet of Mercy in the Quran. And I think to myself, we need more spaces where people can acquire an appreciative knowledge of other religions, whether it's Islam or Christianity or Judaism or Buddhism or humanism. So that's what interfaith organizers do. And we think they do it best when they're organizing interfaith service projects, opportunities where people from different religions work together to serve others. And in that process, they develop these strong relationships, and they learn something positive about the other's religion. Because what they talk about is what it is from their religion that inspires them to do that kind of work.
It made me think as you were talking about that, because people don't about the Islamic faith. Most Americans, I think, have the opposite understanding of Islam. And it's a long road to kind of tell a different story for Americans to grasp hold of. We don't hear much about people in history like the man who worked with Gandhi, Abdul Ghaffar Khan, or people who were Pashtun and nonviolent and now Pakistani. And we don't those stories don't come out. We don't know those stories in America.
Mark, I think that that's right, and I think that that's one of the reasons why we need a critical mass of these interfaith leaders, precisely because those are people who can tell those stories. It's part of the skill set they have, and those are people who can facilitate situations where people from different religions are telling those stories about their own religion. And I have a lot of faith and hope in America in changing around this. I mean, just think about where America has come from. It's from anti-Catholicism and from anti-Semitism. And certainly those things aren't fully gone, but we've made tremendous progress on those two fronts. And so I have little doubt that we'll make progress on other fronts. The current anti-Mormon prejudice, I think, is deep and dangerous. Clearly the anti-Muslim prejudice and the anti-atheist prejudice. These are all deep and dangerous prejudices. They're all anti-American prejudices, I think. But this stuff doesn't happen naturally, and I think that that's really important to realize, that if we are going to have a nation in which people from different backgrounds live in equal dignity and mutual loyalty, if we're going to have a nation characterized by pluralism, which we at the Interfaith Youth Core define as respect for people's identities, relationships between different communities, and a commitment to the common good, then we're going to have a critical mass of interfaith leaders who are skilled in creating the spaces where people from different religious backgrounds come together to build understanding and cooperation, where they can acquire that appreciative knowledge base, where they can serve with people from different backgrounds, where they can build relationships with people from different religions. That's what we're going to need.
Do you think that we still, in many ways, as a people, live apart and don't really know one another?
Well, you know, I think there are different answers to that question. Certainly in this age, there's more frequent and intense contact between people from different backgrounds than ever before, through communications technology, because the cities that we live in and even the medium-sized towns that we live in have people from a range of backgrounds, which, you know, would have probably been unknown by even our grandparents. When I go to Lincoln, Nebraska, or Richmond, Virginia, those places are much more diverse than they were even 15 or 20 years ago. I think the question is, do we have meaningful relationships between people from different backgrounds? And I think the answer to that is it depends. And what it depends most on is whether there are civic spaces where people from different backgrounds get to meet, get to learn appreciative things about each other's traditions, get to develop meaningful relationships. And those civic spaces don't fall from the sky. They are created by people, by leaders. And a big part of what we're doing at the Interfaith Youth Core is training those leaders.
And I wonder, I mean, I'm curious about your thoughts about the 21st century, because you've written that, you know, that how W.B. Du Bois talked about the 20th century being about race. And in some ways, is positing this 21st century could be about religion, faith, and interfaith dialogue or interfaith explosions.
That's exactly right. And by the way, I think, you know, the color line, as W.E.B. Du Bois so aptly called it, is still with us.
Absolutely.
Into the 21st century. But I think that there are other lines alongside it. One of those is what I call the faith line in my book, Acts of Faith. And the interesting thing about the faith line is that it doesn't divide Hindus and humanists. It doesn't divide Muslims and Jews. It doesn't divide Catholics and Protestants. The faith line divides people who we at the Interfaith Youth Core call those who believe in pluralism from those who believe in domination or extremism. Pluralism is very simply defined as a society in which people from different backgrounds live in equal dignity and mutual loyalty. And totalitarianism is defined by people who want only their group to dominate and everyone else to suffocate. I think that the vast majority of humanity inclines towards pluralism. In fact, I think that that's written in our souls by the Creator, that we are meant to like people from different backgrounds. But I think that we need to be proactive about creating spaces that are deliberately characterized by pluralism. And again, that's where leadership is so important. Interfaith leadership is so important.
I mean, there's a whole body of thought in our world, in our nation, that believes that pluralism in some ways is the problem. And by that I mean that people are always pointing out, the reason that there are such low levels of violence, low levels of problems in places like Sweden or Denmark or several countries I could mention is because they're more homogeneous than we are, that the pluralism itself is the problem and it's out of hand. And I think that's a strain of thought in America, and I think it's a very powerful strain of thought.
So I'm not sure I fully understand the question, but let me take a crack at least a piece of it. One of the things about the United States, as President Obama said in his inaugural address, is that we understand our patchwork heritage as a strength, not a weakness. And it hasn't always been easy for us to come to that understanding. We've had everything from the terrors of slavery and Jim Crow to the Know Nothing Party, which was highly anti-Catholic, to the Ku Klux Klan, right? But broadly speaking, we understand our nation as one that has been built by people from different backgrounds. It's a big part of our narrative as an immigrant nation, as a multicultural nation, et cetera. And European countries, and I lived in Europe for several years, don't have that narrative. And they are now becoming more and more diverse because of immigration. And it's not only a challenge for them on the ground to shape positive relationships and integration, but it's a challenge for them to have that framework, that narrative that we have. And so I think that it's important that America be a model for how people from different backgrounds live positively together, because, you know, perhaps more than ever, other nations around the world that are struggling with increased and accelerated diversity in the past few decades are going to need a model for where this works well.
And I'd like you just to share with us for a minute just some of the ideas and stories that have come out of the organization itself, that you've seen on campus, how it's changed life on campus of the Interfaith Youth Corps, especially when in light of the Occupy movement, what's happening. How have the two interrelated?
So I'll address the first part first, which is, you know, my life was changed on a college campus. I grew up in a western suburb of Chicago where I frankly tried to pretend that I wasn't a brown kid with a Muslim name and a heritage from India. And I got to college in the mid-1990s, and I learned that, you know, it was important to celebrate these things, and it was important to recognize that precisely because of my faith and my heritage, I had unique things to contribute to the American project. And what we want to do at the Interfaith Youth Corps is to help college campuses recognize the importance of inviting a more proactive interfaith discussion. Campuses have done a terrific job in inviting a multicultural discussion, but faith identity is often marginalized on college campuses. And because it plays such a powerful role in so many people's lives, and because it's such a source of inspiration to serve, it can be a bridge of cooperation, and oftentimes if it's not used as a bridge of cooperation, you open the floor to forces that try to use it as a barrier of division. We think college campuses can be a terrific laboratory for nurturing interfaith leadership and modeling interfaith cooperation. Thus far, there hasn't been a ton of overt cooperation between the Occupy movement and at least the Interfaith Youth Corps. There's some people in our staff who find the Occupy movement inspiring, but you know we're pretty focused on interfaith cooperation. That's a large enough challenge and a tough enough challenge to do well, and we try to stay focused on the mandate of this organization, which is building interfaith cooperation.
So concretely, how does that work? How does this interfaith cooperation work,
right,
as a social activist model? What are some stories about how that,
right,
works?
So, you know, the folks listening to this podcast can come onto our website, ifyc.org, and they can download a whole bunch of materials, but I'll tell you a couple of concrete ways that works. So we have a team that goes out to college campuses, does training workshops for students, and also for faculty and staff, does big keynote presentations on those campuses about the importance of interfaith cooperation and about how that campus can lead a better together campaign. And that's really the activist model for this, is that you train a group of students to lead a better together campaign, and that campaign is a series of events where people from different religions come together to build relationships, to exchange appreciative knowledge of their traditions, to serve others. And Better Together campaigns have taken place on over 100 campuses, and there's, you know, some terrific examples. We've got some videos on our website about this, but at the University of Illinois, they did an awesome event where over 5,000 people came together to pack dry goods meals for the victims of the Haiti earthquake, and they packed over 5,000 meals. So that's some serious bridging social capital. At the University of Michigan, a young Muslim man put together a powerful group called United to Heal, which salvaged medical supplies from local hospitals and sent them to developing world nations that saved lives. You know, so this is a great example, again, of how an interfaith leader can bring people from different faith backgrounds together and do concrete things that serve the common good. There are exciting stories everywhere from Georgetown University to Agnes Scott College down in Atlanta, all the way out to Stanford University when the Westboro Baptist Church picketed Stanford University with ugly anti-gay slogans. A young Hindu and a young Muslim put together a 1,000-person celebration of Stanford's diversity at 8 a.m. on a Friday morning. That's some serious leadership, you know, getting a bunch of 19-year-olds up and playing bagpipes at 8 a.m. in the morning to say, you know, Stanford is people from different backgrounds who live in equal dignity and mutual loyalty, and we are not going to let you violate that.
Hiba Patel, this is inspiring, as is your work, and I want to thank you so much for joining us today.
Mark, thank you for taking the time. Thank you to everybody who listened to this podcast. And again, you can check us out at ifyc.org.
The Mark Steiner Show is a production of the Center for Emerging Media. Our producers are Justin Levy and Christina Arison. Our theme music is by Wal Matthews of Clean Cuts. To hear this show again, podcast any of our past shows, hear additional interviews, please visit us on the web at steinershow.org. And for Public Radio, WEAA 88.9 FM, the voice of the community. I'm Mark Steiner. Take care.